RCT.org. Click on the schedule, click on Courts in Session, and you can also hear it on Spinatron for those of you guys who are computer savvy. So we've played a lot of Guess Who on the station here in the past year. The band has had a new album. They've been in the last 3 years to Greensburg twice with big sold out shows. And you guys loved their last album. It was on our top 10 list multiple times over the last year as they were releasing new singles. And I'll admit I'm a little biased. Not only am I a fan of the band, but they used a little clip of Yours Truly in one of their videos on their from their latest album, which was a lot of fun. Made my head big. Well, if you've been reading the news, the Guess Who is not on the road, and they are basically been shut down from touring. Now, my understanding is the rights to the band name are held by the original bass player and the original drummer. The original drummer, Gary Peterson, who's been on Courts in Session, was on the show last year, still in the band, still killing it on the drums, but Burton Cummings, who's coming to Pittsburgh, and Randy Bachman, or as my Canadian friends say, Randy Bachman, have sued the Guess Who. And I was reading some of the filings, and even though the Guess Who is doing new albums and making it on the charts, they called them, this is Randy Bachman and Burton Cummings, little more than a cover band. And they filed a lawsuit to prevent them from touring. Well, guys, what do you think about that? Now, Randy Bachman has not been in the Guess Who for a long, long, long time. He left the band in the late 60s, early 70s, made a couple brief appearances, and has done his own thing. A little band called Bachman Turner Overdrive, you may know, right? Done solo work. Burton Cummings left the band late 70s, came back in the early 80s, left them again, hasn't been part of the band for a long time. But those guys are suing the guys in the Guess Who, which means the Guess Who is not on tour and won't be coming to Pittsburgh at least anytime soon. So while you are mulling that over, let's play the most recent solo release from Randy Bachman. And then we'll play something from the latest Guess Who album. And we'll stir up the pot a little bit. Give me a call here at the station, 412-268-9728. Tell me what you think.
phone! Stop! I say, hold the phone, boy!
This is Derek Sharp of the Guess Who, and you are listening to the one and only Eric Jackson Lurie on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. Get back to great radio.
Yesterday, I think it was nothing, and nothing was going on. All at once, I was crying, 'couldn't help myself. Stop this now. It's still inside the times when I want you around. I'm haunted, haunted by a voice from the other side, from the other side. Out of me. Yeah.
So there you got it. The Guess Who, and I lied, that's not from their most recent album. That's from two albums ago. It came out during COVID. Track was called I'm Haunted. And before that, Randy Bachman from his latest solo album, Heavy Blues. What do you think, guys? What side are you on? Are you on the Randy Bachman, Burton Cummings side that the Guess Who should not be out there because they're not in it? Or are you on the Guess Who side where they're making new music and you like what they're doing and you want to hear it? Well, right now, there's no touring from the Guess Who because of the lawsuit, and I'm going to keep a tally. I'm going to mention this again in a week or two, and we'll see where Courts in Session listeners fall. All right, this is a classic band from the 60s. For those of you who remember the band The Circle, C-Y-R-K-L-E, they had a big hit with Red Rubber Ball. Well, they've done a reunion album, and I heard the Mockster play this a couple weeks in a row. And I didn't realize this was Circle or that it was new. I called him up, and he said, EJ, I'll get your act together. Get on top of this new music. So I said, yes, sir. So I'm going to play this now. He's been playing it on Viva La Mock the last few weeks, and it's terrific. This is their comeback, 2024, new music from classic artists. This is We Thought We Could Fly. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are getting near the end of the show. You're listening to Courts in Session. I'm your rocking attorney, Eric Jackson Lurie, and the finish line is in sight. But we got a couple more teams we can get on. And boy, I touched a vein. I love it. Phone is ringing off the hook with your thoughts on the Guess Who, and should they be banned from playing by a couple of the original members who haven't been part of the band for a long time? And I'll tell you what, every single phone call so far tonight, some of you guys are angry, is supporting the Guess Who and not Randy Bachman and Burton Cummings. Okay, well, we'll talk about this more in a couple of weeks. We'll see how this goes. But so far, support is firmly on the side of the Guess Who. And one caller said, why should I not be able to hear them because of a couple millionaires who don't want them to play? Got a great call from Jay in the North Hills who said, Eric, I saw them in 75 with Kansas. And Johnny Winter, he said, Johnny Winter blew them off the stage. I think he's a little mad about that concert. He said, guess who? They were just okay back then. But he's all for the lineup of the Guess Who these days still being able to play. Talking about Kansas, let's send this out to Jay and his brother. This is a classic. Takes me back to being a little kid. From the Vinyl Confessions album. Let's play the game tonight.
Still remember
In the background, we've got the Mandaki Soulmates. I'm going to have Leslie Mandaki on my show, on our show, because this is our show here at Courts in Session. This is a mutual thing. We're going to have him on our show coming up in a few weeks. And next week, John Anderson from Yes, he's coming back, returning to Courts in Session. He's got a new album out, and it is going to be great. I'm a fan, and he's really becoming a friend of the show. Make sure you tune in next Thursday at 8. And if you missed the interview with the guys in Sweet tonight, well, if you listen to Viva La Mock, and you should, at 9 o'clock tomorrow night, the show will play after his, and again Sunday night at 11. You can hear it all over again. I'm your rockin' attorney, Eric Jackson Lurie. Thanking you so much for tuning in. You can hear this all over again in half an hour coming at you over the West Coast at 1033WWRO.com. Want to remind you, take care of each other, be kind to each other, and be proud to be American. Good night, Pittsburgh.
Listening to WRCT Pittsburgh and WRCT.org. Well, we start off saying that all things are not going well right now in Washington.
Some brand new reporting in the New York Times today on a confrontation of sorts inside the White House between Elon Musk and several members of Donald Trump's new cabinet, with Donald Trump sort of reduced to the role of spectator. The Times cites five people with knowledge of the confrontation, reports this about an argument between Elon Musk and Marco Rubio. Quote, "You fired nobody," Musk told Rubio, then scornfully added that perhaps the only person he had fired was a staff member from his Department of Government Efficiency. Rubio had been privately furious with Musk for weeks, ever since his Doge team effectively shuttered an entire agency that was supposedly under Rubio's control, the United States Agency for International Development. Musk was not being truthful, Rubio said. What about the more than 1,500 State Department officials who took early retirement in buyouts? Didn't they count as layoffs, he asked sarcastically, whether Musk wanted him to rehire all those people just so he can make a show of firing them again. Then he laid out his detailed plans for reorganizing the State Department. Musk was unimpressed. He told Rubio he was, quote, good on TV, with the clear subtext being he wasn't good for much else. Where was Donald Trump in all this? The Times reports that he sat back as if he was watching a tennis match. Ultimately, he, quote, intervened to defend, wait for it, Rubio. Said he was doing a great job. Rubio has a lot to deal with, the president said. He's very busy. He's always traveling and on TV. And he has an agency to run. So everyone just needs to work together, end quote. And then for the first time since his inauguration, Trump put some restraints on Elon Musk. From this reporting, quote, from now on, he said, the secretaries would be in charge. The Musk team will only advise. Joining our coverage, host of MSNBC's Politics Nation, president of the National Action Network, the Reverend Al Sharpton, joins us. Christy and Michael are still here. Rev, I have been watching the Bannon-Musk power struggle with keen interest since it first emerged during the campaign. And I think I said on television, do not ever bet against the guy who was willing to go to jail to not testify before Congress, and the guy who sort of in I don't know if his life, I don't know enough about his life, but who seems to understand the base and the most powerful elements of the Trump base better than anybody in Trump land, and that is Steve Bannon. And I don't have any idea if Bannon has any role in all this, but it does seem like Musk has stumbled, not by taking more attention from Trump, which is how most people stumble, but by dirtying him up politically. The things that Musk is doing are not popular among Republican voters in Republican districts.
That's the whole point. I think that Musk could get away with a lot, but he cannot in any way endanger his popularity. When he starts seeing polls coming down based on things that Musk got him to do or that Musk did in his name, that gets his attention. You got to remember, a narcissist is about him. And when you are doing things that in any way injures or besmirches the image of the narcissist, he's got to react. All the logic in the world doesn't matter. Everything else doesn't matter. But wait a minute, he's making me look bad. I don't care how rich he is. And I think that's what Musk is going to run into here.
What's interesting, though, is that this is a different Trump, because the co-presidency has been going on since the beginning, and that doesn't bother Trump. What bothers him, and what has always, I think, sustained him politically, is this reptilian survival sense that if all the Republicans are voted out of office in 2 years, that is a much bumpier road.
It's a much bumpier road. He knows that it will kill anything that he wants to leave as a legacy. And he has no way of stopping that if the polls keep dropping. I think that we really have to understand Donald Trump at the end of the day is about Donald Trump. And he's not going to share that with anyone. Spotlight, he doesn't care. He knows he's the president and Musk is not the president and never will be. But what he doesn't want to be is an unpopular president with no legacy. He wants the Trump library. I mean, what does he do after he leaves? He can't change the law and run a third time. That's just talk. He wants the library. He wants to be respected. He wants people to want him to come around the world. And if
he's
Musk...
He's going to build Trump Mars.
That's right.
All these rocket men
that's
in his
right.
pocket.
That's right. I mean, there's a man talking about buying whole countries. I want to own green.
Yeah.
So that's how he thinks. If Musk gets in the way of that self-image that he has, as unrealistic as it may be, that is where you're going to start seeing division.
I'm going to keep it black, but I'm going to keep it brief. Now, imagine my surprise when I pull up to the DNC, right? The Democratic National Convention. I'm here to speak to members of Congress. I'm here to watch the State of the Union. And my name not even on the list. And I was invited. On the list to get in? Sure. But when it came time to actually do anything and names were called for assignments and activities, crickets. And it wasn't just me. It was all the black creators. Had us out here looking like deers in headlights. So we left and came back home to the only place that had real space for us, the Congressional Black Caucus. Amen? I know that's right. The saying goes, don't go where you're not celebrated. But one thing about us, we have always had to carve out a space to get the job done. So, DNC, the black creators got something to say. And it's a whole hell of a lot more than the scheme set up by Todd they want to call a joint address. Elizabeth, talk to him.
The craziest thing about this administration is how they've convinced Americans that they're going to get rid of fraud, waste, and abuse by taking away critical services from you. Social Security Administration being dismantled. Department of Health and Human Services being dismantled. Department of Education being dismantled. How did they somehow convince a bunch of Americans that not giving you Social Security checks for your grandparents, health care for your families, and schools for your babies to go to is somehow good for you? That South African scammer Elon Musk has gone so far that he even convinced Americans that getting rid of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau would take away taxpayer dollar waste when it's not funded by taxpayer dollars. It's funded 100% by the Federal Reserve. $800 million goes into that agency that then saves Americans billions of dollars in protecting them from fraud every single year. So let me ask you, why would an unelected billionaire want to take away a service that prevents you from being taken advantage of by shady corporations and takes money from your pocket?
Todd, not the Todd that be setting schemes. This is another Todd.
Well, we are certainly in the middle of a hostile government takeover.
We're in the middle of a hostile government takeover.
I mean, look at all the things that are happening. People are losing jobs. People are losing health care. They're losing confidence in our government altogether. And so we need people to realize the gravity of the situation and understand what's going on, but at the same time, to not be fearful and realize that there is a path forward out of this.
Jasmine, Run it on down for him.
Although we are in a hostile administration, we can still be on the offensive. We need to resist the urge to feel jaded and discouraged because despite what mainstream media says, we have the numbers and we are winning. I know y'all know Donald Trump has passed a whole bunch of executive orders and we feel defeated, but these executive orders are actually getting stricken down in court. Do y'all remember his DEI executive order? A Maryland judge issued an order that requires federal contractors to comply with anti-discrimination laws. So that's a win for us. Even, do y'all remember when he tried to end birthright citizenship through an executive order? A Seattle judge already halted that and said that was unconstitutional, which is another win for us. So we are fighting back and we are winning. And don't let right-wing media confuse you.
Who's next? Go, 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 go. Go.
The Black women on a mission are not backing down. The 92% Club has come to Congress with a list of questions, and we are here to get answers. We're going to make it happen for us, by us, all the way from our communities to Congress.
And before we go, I have to say that we're not just a bunch of unrelatable college graduates, influencers, out-of-touch people that are trying to get you to care about things that don't affect you in your everyday life. As a matter of fact, Rayshonda, I think you need to take them to the board.
Well, I don't have a board, but I will teach. I grew up in Mississippi in a small town, all Black, three streetlights. We were raised to know that politics are all around us. My grandfather was always out campaigning and making sure that we elect the correct people in positions because we knew and he knew that by doing so could change generations. And that's what we are doing now. The effects of what we do today will reverberate throughout history. And that's what everybody needs to recognize. Politics are all around us. Politics dictate where we live. Politics dictate the rent that we pay, the eggs that we buy, the clothes that we put on our back. It all affects us. So we need to get right.
The following video is sponsored by the Congressional Black Caucus Political Action Committee.
Renee, keeping it black and keeping it real. Also MSNBC. And we have more in the news for you this hour. Next, Don Lemon breaks it down with one of his lemon drops.
Listen, everyone, all is not well in Trumpville, and I'm going to talk to you about cabinet, or I should say palace intrigue, unlike any other. And this New York Times, there's a new New York Times report that gives us really unprecedented insight into what is happening with the Trump administration, especially between certain cabinet officials and Elon Musk. It appears to be cabinet officials, a certain few of them, versus Elon Musk. On top of that, don't be fooled. Donald Trump is running scared. He is nervous about the tariffs. He's nervous about the stock markets. Remember, he uses the stock markets to engage the overall health of the economy. And the economy's not doing great right now. Was doing better under Joe Biden. The economy's not doing great right now under his leadership or tutelage, however you want to put it. The stock market, not doing well, and his approval ratings are down. And I believe that there is internal polling showing him that Doge is dragging his approval rating down. So this remarkable meeting that happened in the White House is an explosive meeting that Trump says, New York Times says, inside the explosive meeting where Trump officials clashed with Elon Musk. Simmering anger at the billionaire's unchecked power spilled out in a remarkable cabinet room meeting. The president quickly moved to rein in Mr. Musk. First time, really, that has happened. Most of this, they said, was between Marco Rubio, who is the Secretary of State, and Elon Musk, who is the head of Doge. Apparently, Elon Musk is saying in this meeting, in this reporting, that Marco Rubio did not do enough, did not fire enough people. And that started the whole thing off. This is Jonathan Swan and Maggie Haberman's reporting. And so they were going back and forth. And Marco Rubio says, look, a lot of people have taken early retirement. You don't see that as these people as us saving or at least getting rid of some jobs. And then it started from there, the two men going back and forth with each other. And then also the transportation secretary, Sean Duffy, jumping in as well, scolding Mr. Musk and his Doge team, his team of young people, for wanting him to get rid of and fire FAA employees. And Duffy says, you want me to do that while planes are falling out of the sky? And he said, well, and then Elon Musk says, well, you give me the names of the people that we fired. And he says, they didn't fire. Duffy says, we didn't fire them. We don't have any names because smartly, we didn't fire them even on the recommendation of you and your Doge people. Musk was not being truthful with Mr. Rubio. That's what Rubio was saying during the meeting. What about the more than 1,500 State Department officials who took early retirement buyouts? Didn't they count as layoffs? And then Musk fired back. So there's all of this going on. Donald Trump has to jump in and takes up for Marco Rubio and then set some limits on Elon Musk. People have been complaining about this sort of chainsaw aspect. And that is a quote from the New York Times, chainsaw aspect of people who are being fired by the Doge people. Donald Trump then putting out, apparently after this meeting, a post saying that they would take a different approach and they would pull back on this chainsaw aspect of the firings, or at least the layoff, so to speak, of certain people. This is, people think, you guys may think that, oh my gosh, the Trump folks, they have it all together. They have every lever of government. They do have every lever of government, the legislative, the judicial, and the executive branch, but they don't know how to govern. And it appears these cabinets, I guess this cabinet of what some thought would be yes men, has actually become, in certain ways, because of Marco Rubio and Sean Duffy, a cabinet of rivals. And they are pushing back hard on the things that Elon Musk is doing. And it appears that they now have the support of the president. How long that is going to last? Elon Musk saying, I know better than you because I have started and run highly successful billion-dollar businesses, so I know better than you, but has no government experience. And Marco Rubio is saying, I have more government experience than you do, and I think I know how to handle this better. The folks who are in this meeting who really spoke up were Elon Musk, Marco Rubio, Sean Duffy, Howard Lutnick, and then several cabinet secretaries. But the one who is in the most perilous position here is the Veterans Secretary, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and that is Doug Collins. Because there are a number of veterans who will be affected by this and veteran services. So he is concerned that the actual constituents of Donald Trump, of MAGA, of the Republican Party, which are people who have served their countries, those people would be left out in the cold. That they will have services, they will lose services that they are entitled to and have been entitled to for as long as one can remember, for decades and decades and decades now. And therefore, Elon Musk, not knowing how the government actually works, a non-elected official or someone who is at least cutting these jobs, the president making it very clear after that meeting that Elon Musk, that his role and the Doge role, and this is according to the reporting, would be that he was an advisor to the president and just in an advisory role and would give recommendations. The president himself reiterating that again. Apparently, the cabinet secretaries liked that, but they were afraid. They were afraid to weigh in at this meeting after, again, according to the reporting, the caustic responses and answers coming from Elon Musk, that it scared them and they were afraid to speak up. The people he's going at it with, Rubio and Duffy, calling Elon Musk out on what they were calling BS, or that he was not being truthful. Elon Musk telling Marco Rubio that you're terrible at your job, according to the reporting, and you are just good on television. And Donald Trump apparently jumped in to back up Marco Rubio and tell him he's actually doing a good job and that he's traveling a lot and that part of his role was to be on television touting the good things that the Trump administration were doing. So this is, again, more than palace intrigue, but I think this gives us an insight into how the American people are feeling. They may not be seeing it. The administration may be doing a good job of hiding what's going on behind closed doors, but the American people are not stupid. They see the chaos. They're pushing back against Republicans in deep red Republican districts at town hall meetings, pushing back against them publicly. And then, of course, that fake State of the Union that happened the other night, that joint address to Congress, I think folks are seeing through that as well, seeing through it as just sort of window dressing on an administration that is in chaos, an administration that doesn't know how to govern, an administration that is tanking the economy, an administration that is not being transparent and candid and honest with their very own voters. And so don't buy into this bluster that I am the king, I am the chosen one. We know exactly what they're doing. They don't. And if you don't believe it, look at your stock portfolio, if you're lucky to have one. Look at your retirement. Look at your 401k. And by the way, just an indication, we like to evidence and to show polls and to show numbers here, an indication of just how chaotic the American people think of this administration, the chaos that they believe it's in.
Look at this number, up 320% this term's average week versus the first term. This 46-day stretch that the Trump presidency has gone on has the most number of searches for Trump and chaos on record. The American people are seeing this. If they think that Donald Trump is like Butters in South Park, he is Professor Chaos. That is what is going on. The American people at this particular point are going, what is happening here? They are seeing Trump and they are associating him with the word chaos.
Are you okay with all of this chaos? Are the American people okay with all of the chaos? How soon before the wheels fall off? How soon before people realize that, hey, I'm getting less for my money, for my dollar. I'm getting fewer services. Costs are rising. Tariffs are problematic. And to show you just how afraid Donald Trump is, how nervous, how worried he is, in the middle of the day, out of nowhere, an impromptu meeting that he called, press briefing, that was initially supposed to be live and then it was taped, and all he did was sit there and talk about how great the tariffs are, even though the numbers don't indicate that. How much people are loving them. No one is saying how much they love the tariffs. And potentially what he's going to do to stop the war in Ukraine and Russia. There's no indication that there's anything now that's happening on the horizon. So again, smoke and mirrors, a lot of bluster, but behind the scenes, a lot of nervousness, a lot of worry that the wheels are falling off, not only on the economy, but on this administration, which is very young, only within 40 or so days in office.
Thank you, Don. And you can follow his podcast and some of the other things he's doing online by looking on YouTube and going to Don Lemon. Don Lemon, excuse me. All right, next up, we have the head of the VA administration.
The Trump administration announced it's planning to fire thousands more employees at the Department of Veterans Affairs as part of the White House effort to dramatically downsize the federal workforce. A quarter of the VA's workforce comprises veterans themselves, and that's prompting questions about how the cuts might affect the quality and timeliness of the services the VA provides. Doug Collins is the secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs and joins us now. Thanks for being with us. Welcome to the NewsHour.
I'm glad to be here.
So earlier this evening, you confirmed that the VA will terminate an additional 70,000 plus staffers. And you say that these cuts will help the VA fulfill its core mission. How exactly? How is it possible to reduce staffing and resources without negatively impacting the quality and timeliness of care?
Well, the first off is I didn't announce that we're actually going through it at this moment. I said we're beginning the process to look at a reduction in force that will resemble about 15% of the force. And that's what we've begun to do. And what we've done all along is actually take a look at our core functions, making sure that the veteran is first. And it is sort of interesting to me that we say that there's no way this can affect quality of care or others, when really what we're seeing right now and we've experienced over the last few years is Washington, D.C.'s tendency to just throw money and people at problems. Over the last 4 years, there's been $130 billion added to the budget at the VA, and plus 80,000 employees. But yet at the same time, backlogs of benefits have went up. Healthcare wait times have actually went up. And when this was all in a different position just 4 years ago. So the question is not what the, you know, where we're looking at to make sure that we're getting efficient is following what the president has called for, but also making sure that we're delivering it in the best way. And we're the best ones to look at that, but actually taking our force, who is doing a great job, but saying, how can we do it more efficiently?
Well, given the VA wait times scandal during the Obama administration, the ongoing concerns about access to care for veterans, what specific safeguards are in place to ensure that veterans don't face longer delays or reduced services?
Well, I think what safeguards is employees doing their jobs, and which is what they're trying, you know, we're working to make sure they have all the tools to do that. We're also putting in place, you know, making sure that they have the critical assets to the importment schedules. We're making a look at all of how we actually deal with our hiring. Remember, one of the things we've talked about here, and it's not been talked about enough, is we're protecting and have protected over 300,000 positions at the VA that are that we had as mission critical, front facing to our veterans, not only in health care but in benefits as well. We're doing this to make sure that we're actually getting the results we needed. I think too long we found in Washington, and I've said this before, and I said it on the video earlier, that we have this idea that money and people will solve issues. And really the reality is if you don't have good processes in place, you're not going to solve the problem. This has been going on the Hill, and we've known this on Capitol Hill for years. Senator Johnny Isaacson from Georgia, who used to be the chair of the Senate VA committee, actually said this almost 10 years ago. He said the problem with the VA is not that it needs more money, and this was almost $200 billion ago. It needed a better structure, and that's what we're trying to provide.
Well, a question about the process, because our team has heard from scores of veterans who've been terminated as a result of these DOGE cuts. And there's an Air Force veteran who asked that we protect his identity. He says he was twice promoted, yet received a termination notice describing poor job performance. Take a listen.
Last week, to be locked out of my computer and told, handed a blanket termination email that was sent from OPM saying that I was being let go due to poor performance. And it's a flat out lie. It's a disgusting lie at that. You know, I received awards from upper management, certificates. I was treated like a criminal, like I had done something wrong. They're destroying people's lives to get to these numbers that you're requesting. If you don't realize that, I'm trying to let you know now. Here's your wake up call.
So what do you say to that? The indiscriminate or dismissive treatment that some VA staffers are describing related to their termination?
Well, one thing, this will be a probationary employee who was let go. This is where this has been coming from the process, which is an understanding we're looking at the total picture. This is an employee also that was in a non, what was deemed out of those 300,000 plus jobs that I mentioned earlier, not a front-facing position that affects veterans' health directly or veterans' benefits directly. Look, this is something that we have. There's nothing that I take more serious than having to look at our workforce and making and having layoffs that happen. We feel for that, but it happens not only in government. It happens all across the country in many jobs that we're seeing just in the last little bit with Southwest Airlines and others who are announcing large layoffs. These are the kind of things that are hard to do, and there's something that's not easy, and I take very seriously, but also in the perspective of that we have to look out to say, are we going to be fulfilling the mission that the president has asked us to do, and that is to take care of our veterans, but also do in a cost-effective and very efficient manner. And, you know, again, one of the things that I've said here, and it's not mentioned very much in the press, is if this was a area in which it should have been flagged, or this was a mistake and it shouldn't have been part of this probationary, there is an exemption process that would has been used many times, but undoubtedly in this person's case, their supervisor decided not to ask for the exemption because their position where it was and what was going on. So again, it is bad when anyone loses their job, but there have been things in place to make sure that we are trying to target as best we can the areas that we need to.
You know, veterans, as I'm sure you well know, have been hit hard across the board as it relates to these DOGE cuts, because veterans comprise nearly 30% of the federal workforce. And there are Americans who no doubt believe that people who serve their country and who continue that service through their federal job should be exempt from these firings. How do you view it?
Well, I view it as this: as someone who served for 23 years as in the Air Force, who's also been deployed, who also understands what life like is there. It's interesting to me that they always look to the government as an, you know, as where is an exempt an employee. That our job is the government, part of a job for a government employee is something sacrosanct to outside of the government. My other question is for those who say they should be exempt inside of government, where are they in the process of taking care of veterans not working for the government? Look, all veterans are the same to me. They've earned benefits. They've earned and served our country well. They're very protected and loved by me and wanting to be cared for, and that's what they will continue to get their care from, health care and benefits from the VA. But again, it's an interesting thing that we look at government employment as something different than employment outside. And, you know, again, to say that a veteran who's employed by the government is different than a veteran employed outside of government is just frankly not a valid argument.
A question about veteran care. We spoke with a veteran who's currently receiving inpatient treatment at the Bath VA Medical Center in New York. And this person says the cuts at the VA have instituted already are affecting the quality of care.
We've also had a lot of scheduled groups that are being canceled simply because we don't have the staff to facilitate them. And so that leaves us veterans to our own devices. And a lot of people just isolate in their rooms. And for people who suffer from substance use disorder or mental health issues, isolation is one of the worst things you can do, especially in recovery from substance use. To the administration who says there's no effect on veteran care, I say you are absolutely wrong, and come here and I will show you.
What's your response?
Well, my response is this is just a piece of journalism. It's not doing its job in the sense of you're picking a veteran who is saying that they're not getting care in a facility and in a health setting in which those jobs and others have been exempt. And so care that has been taken care of would not have been affected. And also, by the way, this has just happened within the last week. To say that there's this all of a sudden this dearth in care because of cuts that are happening here is simply not right. Remember, in these areas, we're also having, we've exempted 300,000 employees, and sometimes we're having to also, if someone leaves or goes away from that position, we're also having to hire. We're able to hire under, we're not under the hiring freeze for those positions, so we're trying to bring people in. But to blame this and simply use this event to blame it on cuts and blame it on what's happening right now with the VA is frankly not fair to the American people, and it's not fair to veterans who are hearing this thinking that something else is going on. This may be this person's perspective. I respect their position, but their position does not reflect what we've actually done.
How would a veteran like that be able to flag that concern and have it addressed in this new administration?
Well, they can go, you know, if they're having issues, they can talk to the people at the VA. They can talk to their schedulers. They can actually, again, as always happens here, and it's one of the things we got to get away from, if they're having problems with scheduling or scheduling's not happening, we have some issues in third-party scheduling or however they're trying to get their schedule made, is, look, reach out to your veterans service organization. Reach out to the our veteran crisis line. Talk to the people. Don't just simply sit there and think that you're by yourself. We have multitudes of resources to reach out to find out what's going on and to find out what's really happening. My concern is, though, is that people are being led or mistold things that are not actually affecting their specific care, and they're then trying to broaden it out to a more open attack on what they maybe positions that they don't understand or don't like.
Secretary Collins, we are out of time, but we invite you back anytime to continue this conversation. Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Doug Collins. Thank you.
Take care.
That was the Secretary of the Veterans Administration on the PBS NewsHour in this past week. Next, we have Native Land Podcasting. And guess what happened at the State of the Union?
Angela, you brought up the honorable representative from the great state of Texas, Al Green, I believe.
Al Green.
I don't know his district number, but from the great state of Texas, who